south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Let's start out today by reading something very interesting. Now, this is an article that came out last week from San Antonio's News Radio 1200 WOAI. And Texas, as you might know, is ground zero for the flood of illegal immigrants coming in from Mexico and parts south. The title of this news report is Flood of Illegal Immigrant Children into Texas Costing U.S. Taxpayers Billions. And after I read this, I will connect the dots for you here and show how it pertains to us living down here in Latin America. And here's something else you should know before we get into this. According to Texas Border Patrol guards, there are over 2 million illegal Latin aliens in Texas alone. Strangely enough, that's double the amount of legal first world gringos and gringas who've gone to Mexico to set up shop. That is, live, work, play, or retire. Anyway, pay attention to this one. It starts out, the surge of illegal immigrant minors rushing over the Rio Grande threatens to overwhelm the Texas Border Patrol. And new figures show that this unexpected development will cost U.S. taxpayers more than $2 billion this year, according to San Antonio News Radio 1200 WOAI News reports. Border Patrol sources report, more than 1,000 unaccompanied immigrant children are arriving in the U.S. each week, according to figures released by the Department of Homeland Security. And some 60,000 are expected to arrive in the U.S. this year alone. That is up 10 times, or 1,000%, just since 2011. U.S. Representative Henry Krueller, Democrat from Laredo, Texas, who represents a large portion of the border where the waves of unaccompanied children are arriving, says the situation is out of control. The Border Patrol is telling me we need diapers, we need baby seats, so we can transfer them, he said. Some of the unaccompanied children are as young as 3 years old. More than 1,000 have been sent to Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio, and others are being sent to other locations far from the border because the flood has left Border Patrol housing facilities packed. Representative Queller says the flood of unaccompanied minors is costing the taxpayers $252 per day per child. We are playing defense on the one-yard line, Representative Queller told 1200 WOAI News Radio's Michael Board. Meanwhile, U.S. Representative John Carter, Republican from Round Rock, Texas, said the Obama administration policies are to blame, saying federal talk about amnesty and a path to citizenship for young illegal immigrants has led to thousands of children being smuggled into the U.S. The issue is threatening to torpedo any hope of immigration reform of any sort being approved in Congress this year. Many of the young illegal immigrants are smuggled into the U.S. from Central America. The report goes on to say, Honduras and Guatemala are among the worst governed countries in the world, with skyrocketing inflation, a brutal crime rate, and gangs running many cities. The rate of violence in Honduras is the worst in the world, with streets of Honduras more dangerous than Afghanistan or even Syria. Well, I can tell you they got some of those facts wrong. And you know, that always seems to happen when people up in the States report on things that are happening down here from their desks in Boston or on their sofas up in Cleveland. When you get a report like that with no boots on the ground, they always screw up on some things. However, the boots on the ground reporting in Texas is 100% believable. Anyway, the fact is, in Central America, there is no runaway inflation. In fact, it's about exactly the same as those inflation numbers the U.S. government is so good at lying about. And that bit about Guatemala and Honduras having the worst governments in the world? Oh, sure, those governments and most of the rest of all the governments in Latin America really suck, but look who's calling the kettle black. Don't forget that nearly every gringo and expat that I know in business down here is in the 5% or less tax bracket. That's what we all pay for bad government down here. How about you, poor saps? You're paying 40 or 50% up there for your crappy, corrupt government. Don't ever forget that. And that bit in the article about Latin American cities being run by gangs? Well, I'll get into that in a few minutes. But back to the article. It continues, Representative Queller says the key to dealing with this flood of young illegal immigrants is to work with Mexico to help that nation shore up its southern border. Mexico, which has a well-functioning economy and is emerging as a Latin American economic powerhouse, is now suffering from the migration of illegal immigrants for the first time. If we're going to be smart neighbors, I think we need to engage Mexico a lot more than we're doing, he said. The brilliant statement from a brilliant politician, huh? That's me talking. And by the way, that bit about Mexico being that Latin powerhouse economy, don't make me laugh. But more on that, too, in a minute. Anyway, it goes on to say, many of the young illegals report horrific abuse at the hands of immigrant smugglers, including being raped, being physically assaulted, and being forced to perform slave labor to pay off the costs of their transportation. The article goes on to say, hiring a smuggler to take a 13-year-old from Honduras to the United States is said to cost $9,000, or far more than the average Honduran family makes in a year. Okay, now it's me again. I've heard numbers like that bandied around, anywhere from $4,000 to $10,000. But I'm here to tell you there's something very wrong with those numbers. Remember, these are people who have dirt floors and tin roofs. They've got nothing, and nothing to lose. Fact is, in all my years down here, I've never met a middle-class or lower-middle-class Latin who could come up with even $100 at short notice for an emergency. And believe me, that class of Latins are the only ones that ever go up to the States illegally. The upper middle class and educated Latins would never consider doing that. Sure, they'd all like to go up to the States and visit Disneyland and New York and all that, and some of them do. And they, too, believe 100% that there's some kind of American dream up there. But you see, they do have some assets at home and therefore have something to lose. Like, for example, a decent job and a career. And they know if they got caught in the States as illegals, they'd never be allowed a legal visa to get back into the country for any reason. It's true they have jobs and careers that do not pay much by our standards. But they are proud of the fact that they're a cut above the average person here. Believe me, it's the scruffiest, worst, most uneducated group of Latins that try to get to the States. And as classist as that sounds, that's just the way it is. The fact is, an illegal alien up in the States who's got a college degree from a Latin American university is unheard of. And the fact is, less than 10% of illegal aliens up there have the equivalent of a high school education. So that's the sad fact of what you've got to deal with up in the States. I'm here to tell you, not even upper middle class people have $4,000 to $10,000 cash. It seems like everyone down here, except gringos and expats, are on the payment plan for everything they own. Even though it is a cash-based society, hardly anyone has any real cash. That's why, down here, a $500 or $1,000 down payment will get you a brand new house or car. That common denominator had to be reached, or no one would ever own a new house or car. Excepting narcos and corrupt politicians, of course. Are there any other kind? Now, the fact is, and I've heard it from diverse sources, that the vast majority of these so-called mojados, that's the term for wetback. And believe me, it's no insult. It's used down here all the time. It translates directly to a person that's drenched in water, because that's what you get if you swim the Rio Grande River. So even if wetback is not PC in the States, down here, that's what illegal immigrants are known as. So what about that $4,000 to $10,000 they say you need to pay a coyote to slip into Texas? Yet, we all know that poor folks don't have a chance in hell of scraping up a fraction of that. Even so, millions still make it to Texas every year. What's up with that? Well, I've heard from various sources that the vast majority of people trying it start out with much less than $500 in their pocket. So, how do they do it? Well, they generally make a deal to tag along with a local person, maybe from their own neighborhood, who's done the trip before. A guy who's been deported once or maybe even three or four times, that's common. and therefore knows his way around a bit and has developed a kind of a network of friends and safe houses or fields or forests to crash in, a kind of an underground wetback railroad. As one old Latin guy told me who'd been deported many times himself, he said, like gate crashers at a concert, there's always a bunch of guys and gals who show up who don't have the money, but somehow get in. So next time you hear about that $4,000 to $10,000 crap for a coyote, just know that doesn't happen in the real world. Anyway, according to this article, analysts say some illegals are actively gaming the system. They're being given false hope by smugglers of some sort of blanket amnesty for children if they can make it to the U.S. Some children are told falsely that after that amnesty is granted, they will be able to bring their families into the U.S. as well. One young Honduran lady told Reuters that she didn't think that entering the U.S. was even illegal. "Everybody in my hometown in Honduras was doing it," she said. Okay, and it's me again. Now, think of it. She says everyone in her hometown in Honduras is doing it, yet she doesn't think it's illegal. So, tell me now, does that give you the impression that it's ridiculously easy to slip into the United States and just plant yourself there and live the American dream? Obviously, from what that Honduran girl says, most of them think it's a sure thing. Okay, so that's the gist of it. Anyway, my question to all you expat and expat wannabes out there is, just who are all these illegal immigrants flooding into the States? Where are they coming from and why are they in such a rush to get the hell out? Why, it's because the poor folks down here anyway, the ones that live in those terrible, dangerous, ghetto-y sections of Latin cities, most who live with polluted water, dirt floors, and tin roofs, still believe in that persistent myth of the American dream. Well, for one thing, they're an extremely undereducated and unknowing bunch. They don't read, but they watch a lot of TV and have at least one relative or two or maybe six who are living up there illegally now and sending back money called remesas. And like one of these deported guys once told me, just the fact that many people are sending back those cash remesas every month shows that they've achieved the American dream, since the average Latin has no money at all left over at the end of the month for anything. Oh, and about that so-called massive Mexican economic engine, did you know that the number one source of foreign income for Mexico is not tequila or Corona beer or petroleum or natural gas? And by the way, it's one of the world's biggest natural gas producers. And since it's wholly government-owned, it's a massively chaotic, corrupt disaster. But you knew that, didn't you? Anyway, in Mexico, the number one source of foreign income is those remesas, those monthly wire transfers coming mostly from illegal aliens up in the States via Western Union and such. And by the way, it's been estimated that 95% of those dollars transferred to Mexico every month have never been taxed, because these people are getting cash off the books. Now, we all know that the unemployment figures up in the States, for regular U.S. citizens, of course, are pathetic. Ask any U.S. citizen up there, especially any recent U.S. college grad, and you'll hear wailing and gnashing of teeth. Yet, with employment conditions so dire in the States, why do millions upon millions of illegal Latins keep rushing the border? Why? Because of that so-called American dream. So you ask, why the persistent myth when so many able-bodied Americans are out of work? Well, that's easy, because illegal aliens can go up to the States and survive whether they actually work or not. The fact is, when down here in Latin America, like I am, if you hang around middle-class folks, that is, people making $300 to $500 a month, you'll run into deported Latin Americans all the time. Go into a hardware store, go into a bank, go shopping at a Walmart, and the friendly guy stocking shelves who tries to speak a little English with you, 9 out of 10 times, the guy was an illegal in the States and now deported. In fact, most of those guys have a slight advantage on their resumes after being deported and coming back to their home countries, because businesses down here are always looking for someone who's bilingual. In any field, those jobs always pay a little bit more. And you know, over the years, I've met a lot of these deported aliens at parties and get-togethers and quinceañeros, gigs and stuff. They always manage to chum up to the lone gringo like me, who's sitting on the couch looking thoroughly bored, flicking the remote looking for Turner Movie Classics or HBO in English. Unfortunately, I'm always the one they try to practice their ghetto English on. And you know, I don't think I've ever met a deported Latinan, like I said, I've met hundreds of them, who wasn't dying to get back to the States somehow. Why? Well, even though they're illegals and have learned nothing but bad habits and bad English in the barrios up in the States, for them, not only is it a huge ego boost to say they lived up in the States and had money and the American dream, even if they only had it a couple of months before they got caught and deported, the fact is, it's easy for us gringos who speak Spanish to notice they really believe they're a cut above their friends and relatives who've never been there. They consider themselves somewhat first world and are proud of it, and often rub it in to their families and friends who haven't made the trip, even to the point of irritating people, and I've seen that. But the fact is, I've never met one of these deported guys who wasn't gaming the system up in the States somehow. Of course, when they first sneak in, they haven't got a clue, but they learn fast. The fact is, I've been told the first thing that happens when you arrive in, let's say, Los Angeles as an illegal, once you find and hook up with your illegal friends and family, the first thing that happens is they hook you up with the neighborhood fixer. That is, a local Latin person who knows all the angles with all the freebies and the government programs and how to get in on them. Not to mention the ins and outs of fake IDs and social security numbers, etc. Now, in that vein, the other day I was talking to one of my seminar attendees who ended up coming down here to live, and this time I learned another depressing fact about the U.S. that I wish I hadn't known. Now, this guy is from Cleveland, and he has some experience with the so-called Obama phone, which I knew very little about until he mentioned it. And when he explained to me that he personally knew some people up in Cleveland who, due to their low income status, not only receive a free phone or virtually free phone, but get 250 minutes a month for free too. Well, a few days later, I was at an all-Latin party, a mixed crowd with mostly middle class and upper middle class folks, and when we got to talking about, or well, I should say when I got to talking about that so-called myth of the American dream, well, when some folks at that party started speaking to me in broken English, in hearing the slang they use, obviously they'd been deported at some time or another. Well, when they started rattling off the benefits of being up in the States, their take on the American dream and such, that's when I next heard mention of that Obama phone again. And get this, and this really made me laugh. Sitting around were maybe 20 people in the living room and three young ladies on the couch. When they heard that free phones and minutes were being given away by the government up in the States, you should have seen their eyes light up. And just as an aside on this Obama phone thing, I looked it up and actually found out it was started under Bush in 2005. That's when the FCC started allowing some prepaid wireless providers to participate in this program. And as usual, since every government program becomes like a cancer, there was tremendous growth. This really has to blow your mind. It's like out of the Twilight Zone. It says here on this political news site, www.politico.com, the phone program's focus is on low-income customers, but it also benefits telecom companies. And here's the Twilight Zone part. Providers receive $9.25 a month per customer in subsidies. TracFone, led by Mexican billionaire Carlos Slim, has focused its business model on low-income subscribers. In 2009 alone, Slim's company received $190 million in U.S. support payments, according to a U.S. Government Accountability Office report. Okay, now, did you get that? Free phones or subsidized phones to poor people in the States, including hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens that game the system, by the way. And where did the subsidies go? Back to Mexico to billionaire Carlos Slim. Man, I'm telling you, you can't make this stuff up. But that's not all. It says here, Carlos Slim's track phone company remains the top carrier, followed by Virgin Mobile, AT&T, Nexus, and Verizon. And subsidy payments to these companies increased 1,000-fold since 2009 to $2.2 billion. Now, don't you feel good about that? And how do you qualify? Well, it says here, subscribers qualify for the program based on income with only one service permitted per family. But for years, people didn't need to prove eligibility at all, which led to systemic misuse and phone duplications, Representative Tim Griffin, Republican, Arkansas, said. He said one day, free phones just started showing up at the homes of his poor constituents. It's me again. So what does that mean? They're delivered to the homes too? And finally, it says here, Americans pay for this Lifeline service and several other phone programs through a monthly charge on their phone bills that averages $2.50. So why am I talking about all this? Well, that's the kind of thing that draws illegal aliens coming up from Mexico and parts south who live in crime-ridden districts in big cities throughout Latin America. That's where the majority of illegal aliens come from. So all you gotta do is sneak past the border, hook up with your illegal buddies or family members in Houston or East LA, join the drywall or the landscaping crew. That's if you can, though it's becoming less and less likely with those chronic unemployment problems up in the States. Either way, get to a fixer and get yourself some fake documents and little by little start feeding at the government trough. So again, back to the incompletely educated, unwashed masses that find their way up to the States. They're leaving for a lot of reasons. They're uneducated, unskilled, dirt poor, and they hail from terrible crime-infested areas. So they've got plenty of good reasons to leave, besides being part of the American safety net slash welfare system and getting an Obama phone. So then, how bad is the crime in Latin America? Or more importantly, how does the crime situation in Latin America affect us gringos and long-term expats living down here? Do we live in fear, shutting ourselves behind guarded walls and barred windows? Now, all you longtime listeners to this show know that I always recommend living in the smaller towns in Latin America, generally towns under 50,000 people, where there is a small town atmosphere, everybody knows everyone, where the public is basically self-policing. Since it's well known that throughout Latin America, cops sit on their dead asses in their patrol cars or their little guard shacks and do pretty much nothing. Oh, and by the way, when you hear stories about heavily armed military and police forces on every corner, remember what I said in so many past shows. Those cops at the car roadblocks are just there to see if you got your license and registration in order so they can give you a ticket if you don't. They're not there to shake you down and screw around with you. They may look mean all dressed up in their fatigues and khakis and stuff, but in 20-something years down here, I've never been screwed with by those guys. Now, that's not to say around Christmas time I haven't been hit up for a $10 or $20 bribe, and I know it's a bribe. But you can usually play stupid gringo and talk your way out of that one, too. If you live down here, you'll know what I mean. I've spoken enough about that stuff in past shows, so if you want the details, just go into the archives and check it out. So let's talk about crime in Latin America. Now, you have to know, like any big city, even in the States, there are very good and very bad areas and areas that are kind of in between. For example, let's take that very dangerous city, Guatemala City, or so says the First World Press and the U.S. State Department. Now, you know, I've done a couple of seminars in Guatemala City. I have a lot of very good contacts there. Many long-term expat friends who've made good. And thus, I have a pretty good idea just what is and what isn't dangerous in Guatemala City. Now, Guatemala City and the vicinity around it contains about 3 to 4 million people. It's the biggest city in Central America. And like I say, right up front at the seminar, as soon as we get started, the city's divided into 25 zones or neighborhoods. And that about 10 of these zones are to be avoided day and night because they're just stacked balls to the wall with poor, low-class folks and the jerks that prey on them. These are places I never go and I don't recommend you or any other gringo or expat take a nice stroll through. Then the city has another 6 or 7 first world type zones or neighborhoods that are quite safe both day and night. In fact, if the signs and billboards weren't in Spanish, you'd think you were in a nice upscale district in a mid-sized city up in the States. In fact, I can't tell you how many of my seminar attendees have said those exact same words. So, like I said, Guatemala City has 25 distinct zones. And in that mix, there are about 5 or 6 business and commercial zones that are totally safe by day, but I wouldn't recommend taking a stroll through at night. So, the fact is, 95% or more of all the crimes, homicides, extortions, and all that occur in those 10 or so bad zones I was telling you about, the ones I never recommend you take a stroll through unless you're in a car. And about the public transportation. Since those chicken buses are packed elbow to butthole with all of the poor, sweaty masses who could never hope to own a car. That's where a hell of a lot of crime also exists, and I always advise you never take a chicken bus. And of course, you know I'm always about the low profile and blending in, so any gringo or anyone with a nice new SUV is just asking for trouble. Now, I have to repeat, I recommend living in a small town in Latin America, a town of 50,000 or under. I've always lived in smaller towns or out in the burbs because I know it's a hassle to live in any big city anywhere, especially in Latin America. When you've got a city of a million or more, there's always terrible pollution and bad traffic bottlenecks. Though I've been around the world a few times, and I know the bad traffic is a problem in every big city, first world and third world. In fact, I know of no city in the world with a million or so people that doesn't have a 1 or 2 hour rush hour traffic jam from one end of the city to the other. And speaking of my take on crime in Latin America, for you doubters, what I have in front of me is a quite extensive newspaper article which addresses statistical crime and violence in, specifically, the country of Guatemala. Get ready for a few surprises. First, they list the 5 most dangerous cities. And they're the usual suspects, all of them over 100,000 people. But, as is always the case, even in those big cities, there are some nice, safe, first-world-like areas. Some very safe neighborhoods and shopping areas both day and night. Now, also in this extensive article, they list the 20 safest cities in Guatemala. Let me translate some of this because it is in Spanish. Here's what it says. There are many other municipalities that have reported almost no criminality in the last 6 months. Let me list some of these places and their populations. Number 1, Aguas Calientes in Zacatepeques has 11,000 people. Santa Apolonia, 17,000 people. Santa Maria Visitacion, 5,000 people. Concepcion, 7,000 people. Santa Ana Sembajal, 14,000 people. Santa Karina Palapo, 6,000 people. Santa Catarina La Laguna, 8,000 people. Sibinal, 20,000 people. And Rio Blanco, 10,000 people. So what about actual crime statistics in these little towns? First, let's talk about a small town that on an annual basis has virtually no crime. Hard to believe with a country so tainted with bad press like Guatemala. But this town's not the only one, not by a long shot. So first, let's talk about this little town called Aguas Calientes, meaning hot water in English. To be continued, next show.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture.